This podcast contains language that is not appropriate for children, including Fucktropolis, Cum Guzzler, and Betsy DeVos. Because we want to make America really fucking dumb.
Yeah, because we want our leaders in education to not understand the difference between proficiency and growth and, or like, you know, answer, you know, just very basic questions.
Yeah, well, this is Donald Trump's America, so, yeah. You know. Standards.
It's almost like her family may have like made a substantial contribution to the Trump campaign or something. I don't know.
Maybe that's how it works now. So this is the world that we live in. So who's sponsoring us tonight?
Well, tonight's episode of the Science Enthusiast Podcast is brought to you by Nazi Punching. Nazi Punching, the secular equivalent of thoughts and prayers.
You know why? Because it's useless.
It doesn't do anything or accomplish anything and only makes you sacrifice your own morals.
Yep. All right, so goodbye to the few listeners who are leaving us right now. We're sorry.
You won't be missed. we'll be just fine without you. Anyway, hello, and thank you for listening to the Science Enthusiast Podcast. My name is Dan, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely friend, Natalie. I feel like we've done lovely before.
Well, you say it with a question mark, but you can improvise if you want. You don't have to go off book.
If it's not on the Google Doc, I'm not going to read it.
All right, fine. But I was feeling like, you know, you could give me a little love this week. Why not?
Are we gonna start?
That voice comes out at the end.
Early.
No, you save it. You save it for later. Like we work
up to
that.
Off a little early.
That operator voice. So, yeah. But you're doing it now. So, all right. Thanks for giving the people what they want. Yeah.
Well, and eventually when we have Trevor Valley back on, apparently we're going to have some sort of contest, he says.
All right. You guys could have a phone sex operator voice off.
I don't know what that's going to look like or how that's going to go.
I guess I just listen.
Now this is like transitioning into NPR voice.
It is, yeah. It's
Hello,
like
this is
yeah.
All things considered.
Do you want me to do a God of the Week? Do you want to introduce it in like an NPR voice way?
And now for God of the Week.
Well, that was not
very good.
That was okay. It was okay. I found that okay. I feel like I'm on NPR right now because I'm going to keep this super classy.
Well, somebody gave feedback that said that we're like NPR but with profanity.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I like that. I'll take it.
Nobody's claimed that we've given them cancer yet. So
I know, like, we haven't even given anybody like herpes. Or
I know it's. Yeah. I mean, it's like, why did I even like make an LLC to protect ourselves from being sued?
I know.
In the first place,
like, we have not infected anybody yet.
if we're not going to get sued, like, what's the point of having it?
I know, but just, it makes
it
us seem like
a lot of
official.
Money, it took time to set up.
I know. Anyways, so we have a god of the week, and it's Ishtar, the Mesopotamian war goddess. So she is feisty. She doesn't stand for any bullshit. So she's like, she's really cool, and she's really popular for being a strong and independent woman. So this is like, you know, one of those just nasty women in all the best possible ways. So she's a war goddess, but she's also a love goddess. So she is like, you know, hot and sexy and is really into the dudes in like a big way. She has a husband and he is the one who oversees agriculture and rebirth, it said. But he also, like, every year goes and hangs out in the underworld for like a few months.
As you do,
because maybe like Ishtar is just a little too much for him to handle. So I guess though, when he's gone, she still has a really good time doing her thing. It says she's the goddess of the evening star. I don't really know what that means. And her symbol is an 8-pointed star, and that she's determined to like keep her star shining as long as a sex goddess is needed. So I think that's always, right?
Would that be like Jupiter? Like the evening star?
Is that what it is? So that's her. So of course.
It's not a star. They're just demonstrating their knowledge of science and
totally. This is all very scientific, all of it. So up there is this lady.
It totally fucking happened too.
It happened. It totally happened. So
#NeverForget.
Right. And so like the thing with her is, I know that there was the request for like, dick and vagina references, obviously. So
I mean, kind of got in there a little.
I figure that she's somebody who could probably handle a golden dick, right? Because she's really into the sex.
Yeah. I mean,
there's my golden dick reference. Because we also have to do it.
Like I wrote a blog about this, but I didn't post it this week. But I have it. Like I don't know. I'm debating it. But there's also the chakrubs. Have you seen that thing?
No.
It is.
What did I miss?
Apparently it's not new. I thought it, but like it just went viral, and I've had a bunch of people like message me about it. But it's. I don't know how to. It's a dildo and butt plugs and like. I guess like an egg or whatever. It's supposed to be made out of crystal, but like crystal is like a shape, but not like an actual like mineral itself. Yeah. So like the whole thing like doesn't make sense, but it's like they took like chakra and then like it's like new age pseudoscience for your vagina or your ass. Like, I mean, why not both? Like, I'm not your dad.
So it's like vagina and butt woo. Like, that's just...
Crystal
butt woo. Crystal butt woo is a thing. Okay, so maybe Ishtar would be down with that. I don't know. But so next week, you know how I usually put the God story in the Google Doc? Like, so that if you read the Google Doc, you can technically see it. Next week's, I'm not even putting in the Google Doc because it's so good. I want you to hear it for the first time when I tell it.
You're making the false assumption that I even like look at the Google Doc.
I know you. I know. But
so you'll send it to me. Hey, does this look good? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. I could just write
whatever.
Like.
I don't care.
You don't care. You trust me. We have a trusting relationship here. But next week's is going to be real good because it's, I think, the weirdest one that I've found so far. So everybody, stay tuned for a. weird story.
That's like the worst like tease. like stay tuned, this thing might be moderately interesting.
Yeah, it really is. This story was actually given to me from one of our former guests, Matthew O'Neill, who was on the show back a while ago.
You're supposed to say friend of the show.
Oh, friend of the show.
Makes it sound cooler.
He's a friend of the show, and he found me the weirdest story. So, yeah, it's really good. All right, so that's it. Ishtar, God of the Week. And you brought in crystal butt plugs. So I think we covered a lot of ground here. I feel good about it.
Yeah, you do.
Tonight, we are thrilled to be joined by Matthew Fassiani. Matthew is a sociologist, activist, and science communicator. He contributes to Pathos, which hosts his blog, According to Matthew. So welcome, Matthew, to the Science Enthusiast Podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So I always like to kind of get people's backstory when we have them on and talk to them. I mean, you do a lot, obviously, like science communication, activism. You are a sociologist, and are you studying for your PhD or?
I am. I've been in grad school a long time, but I'm still working on the PhD. Actually, if you want to go in the backstory, I actually started off in neuroscience, so I'm a bit unorthodox in my background.
So you started in neuroscience, and now are you still studying sociology for your PhD?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you want to kind of talk about, I guess, where you're, let's start with science. So since you just mentioned neuroscience, like where did your interest in science come from?
Sure. I think a lot of it stemmed from college. I never really took much college or science in high school, actually. I wasn't the best high school student, but I was always interested in learning and reading on my own. And then once I got to college, I started taking some science courses, like an intro to psych course, a biology course, and I loved it. I loved every bit of it. And my major in college was psychology, and I gravitated a little bit more towards neuroscience as well. And that's why I ended up going that route at first. But I was really interested in just human behavior really broadly and how we can study it scientifically.
Now that's interesting. I was a psych major in college too. And in one of our earlier episodes, we had one of my former professors on who kind of inspired awesome. The whole like skepticism thing. Cause I took an irrational behavior class in college that was part of my psych major. And it was like, you know, pretty much why people believe weird things. So yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. My specific focus is social psychology. And I'm very fortunate that I'm in a graduate program that has such an emphasis on science and theory and methods, and it's very rigorous. And there's so much that we focus on beyond some people's ideas about what sociology is that doesn't include some of the scientific aspects to it.
And so as I was kind of looking through your website and stuff, I noticed some recent research that you did about comics. And
yeah.
I find that pretty interesting. And I'd love for you to talk about this. What was it called? Holy Race and Gender Discrimination, Batman, which like fantastic title. I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, just some of the research that you've done in your field.
Yeah. I have such a weird background. So I actually did that comic book project in my neuroscience program at the end of it. My old advisor had this big Excel sheet of all the data she collected on comic books. And for whatever reason, it just never got around to getting published. And she knew I had an interest in gender and race as I was looking to go towards sociology as before I officially switched. But she's like, well, if you want to turn this into a paper, you know, go knock yourself out. And that's what I did. So I combed through the data again and tried to see some patterns that were emerging and wrote up a paper. And that wasn't the official paper title. That was the presentation one. The official paper is a little bit more academic sounding.
Well, I liked the catchiness of the of the title that I was able to see on your website.
Thank you.
So did you present this somewhere or was it just kind of published? And because I mean, I think it's very interesting from sort of a pop culture perspective too. Like this is media that's out there, you know.
Yeah, I actually presented it at a gender equality conference in New York.
And what? And can you maybe describe a little bit of what you found in this research?
Sure.
I mean, I guess as I looked at it, I wasn't necessarily surprised.
Yeah, and that's what I would say. This research was pretty intuitive. It's what you might expect. White males are very overrepresented in all forms of the different characters. So not just in the superheroes, like the people on a title, but we looked at characters that have any sort of agency in the comic books. So if they can direct the story in any direction, and we find that overwhelmingly it's white men that are so overrepresented, where women and people of color are in much lower levels. So again, you're right. It's unsurprising. And I was just kind of given this data set to turn to a paper. But it was still a fun project, and I literally just got to flip through some comic books as part of my research.
Yeah, and I mean, and you figure children, teenagers, I mean, adults, like everybody's, you know, reading comics, and you know, it just, I guess, at this point would make sense to have a more varied group of characters in them. I mean, I wonder when it would catch up with kind of what the world actually looks like, or
it's interesting because, you know, I'm not actually a big comic books person, or it wasn't really my idea to study this, but as I jumped into it, I got really interested in how comic books and media more broadly can represent where we are as a culture and kind of just and tell us about different subcultures too. So it's interesting from that perspective sociologically, but also psychologically it's interesting because how people are affected when they consume this media. So if you're growing up and all you see as in your comic books or characters that look like you happen to always be the janitor. Well, how's that going to impact you and your view of the world?
Well, yeah, that, I mean, that's what I think is interesting to kind of put out there, that you want kids to be able to look at books and look at media and be able to kind of envision themselves in so many different roles, I would think. And so for it to be so homogenous, you know, it's just kind of a bummer that there's not a more varied, like, cross-section of identities that are out there to see. But maybe change will occur. Perhaps.
I hope so. It has gotten better. It has gotten a lot better. I mean, the stuff I was looking at was from around 2006, I think, to like 2010. And even in the past 5 years, it's gotten way better. So, and this is way better than like the 50s and 60s. So we definitely see progress.
Well, even the other day I saw somebody post somewhere on social media, like how even like Barbies are changing a little bit now. Like they have different like body type Barbies as opposed to just the, like, I guess the one that I had when I was a kid, you know, that like is freakish in her body type, sort of.
It doesn't even look human.
Maybe, that doesn't even look human. I mean, she's like standing on her tiptoes, like the ones I had. So because her feet were made only for high heels, because that's all that women wear, I guess, are high heels. But now I guess maybe they're trying to change things in a way that, you know, Barbie. I mean, I haven't bought a Barbie in a while, but I think that toy companies and things that are geared towards kids sometimes are trying to maybe change the narrative a little bit with it, and hopefully so.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, and I know that for you, your like gender equality activism is one of your interests, right? And one of the things that you're doing. So can you maybe talk a little bit about your work with that?
Sure. So I guess I can kind of back up to my origin story of how I even kind of got into activism and then kind of grow from there. I wasn't too involved in activism as a college student. I became more of an activist when I moved to South Carolina, and I realized I felt very out of place as an atheist living in the Bible Belt. So, it was kind of a culture shock for me to move somewhere where I was just everywhere. These sort of conservative and religious values were so prevalent in my region. So I started to look for a secular group that I could join. And I joined the Secular Student Alliance group at my school. And from there, my activism just kind of took off, because luckily there was some really awesome students in this group, and they were always involved in all sorts of social justice activities. And one of the areas was feminism. Another area, obviously, was separation of church and state. But it really got me thinking about so many concepts that I studied a little bit in college, because I also took some sociology classes that talked about this. But it wasn't until I really started to learn about these concepts like privilege and the different advantages and disadvantages that people have that I felt more inclined to try to help out.
Yeah. And so is there any, like, are there any, I guess, causes or events that you found really shaped your activism, or that stick out for you as really like meaningful experiences?
Yeah, there's been a few. I've been really lucky to work with some really awesome activists in South Carolina. So that's another thing I'd want to say, is that, like, I know the South Carolina and the South in general kind of have a bad reputation, and a lot of time it's deserving. But there's some really wonderful people here that are really trying to make a difference. So it's important to remember that there's a lot of great progressive-minded people around these areas trying to make them better. And for me, I try to support the women's equality groups in South Carolina. So I was working with a group a couple years ago, and we were all fighting this bill that tried to ban abortions at 20 weeks because the premise was that fetuses can feel pain. So we constantly see this pop up. And just recently with Ohio is trying to pass that absurd bill with the heartbeat bill.
Oh, yeah, I know. I wanted to bring this up with you guys because, yeah, they like that's is it actually happening?
It's going.
I think
forward.
It needs a signature.
Yeah, he has to. He can either veto or sign it. And if he signs it, it's going to be a colossal waste of money because it's not constitutional. It's not going to hold up, and the ACLU is going to sue the shit out of them. And they're going to win too, is the other thing. So it's completely ridiculous, especially when you consider most women don't even know they're pregnant until what, like midway through their first trimester.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the issue too. It's like these people don't know that they're pregnant, and especially if you're not trying to conceive, like you probably don't know. And also, it's not up to them to choose what a woman does with a pregnancy. So there's that too. So we still live in times where we're, I guess, needing to have our eyes open and fight these battles. So Matthew, that's something obviously that's on your radar.
Yeah, definitely. So in South Carolina, unfortunately, we do deal with that. And in one of the experiences I had, I was trying to fight, it was a 20-week ban. So compared to this 6-week ban, it actually doesn't even seem so bad, but it was still just completely based on pseudoscience too. So I went in there and I testified against my local Senate and Congress, and I told them the science behind this bill, that there's no evidence that fetuses feel pain. And I gave them the articles to read. And it was interesting just how dismissive they were of the evidence. So for me, you know, coming from this scientific background, I'm like, oh, I'll just show them the facts and they'll listen to me. It was so naive of me.
How did that go? Yeah.
It did not go well at all. You know, the most pro-life legislators were so dismissive, and it was so interesting because this one guy in particular, Lee Brights, who thankfully did not get reelected, but he's super conservative. I remember he asked me if I watched this The Silent Scream documentary, which is this total propaganda bullshit documentary that has no scientific basis. And I told him that, you know, it wasn't science. And he was just like, well, I saw this documentary. So, you know, you have your papers, I have my documentary. It's all equal.
Right. Because documentary means facts all the time. Like, that's it. Just pure facts. Always.
Yeah. According to this guy. Yeah. And the same guy, he asked, there was an abortion doctor that testified after me. He asked this guy, the doctor, if while performing an abortion, if the baby ever tried to run away mid-abortion.
Wait. Hold on. Does this guy know anything about babies? About people? Or, if that happened, I think we probably would have seen that in some newspaper somewhere.
And we also wouldn't be doing abortions anymore. I would be on board with we probably shouldn't abort kids.
But something that could run away.
Something that is sentient, is aware of its surroundings, is mobile.
Okay, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sitting here like mouth open. Like, that is one of the weirdest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, and this is the guy writing the laws for women, so it's pretty scary.
Holy shit, that's terrifying.
I think that's just the narrative for the history of law. This is a guy writing the laws for women. I think that's just the best summary you can give for any sort of discussion about women's rights or body autonomy.
Yeah, I mean, it's sadly common. Like, this guy said something outrageous, but I mean, it happens all the time. What was it with Todd Akin said that women could just shut the whole thing down, right? If they're being sexually assaulted and they would get pregnant.
That's right. You just shut it down.
Legitimate rape. That was his terminology.
So if it's a legitimate rape, the body has processes that can shut it down.
Like, it's like you just want to tell all of these guys, like, that's just not how it works. Like, that is not how anything.
And I guarantee some of these people would be the same people that their best friend decides that she's going to have an abortion. They're going to find ways to justify that. Be like, well, she's different. She's, you don't know her background. You don't know her story. She's different. Yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. The same exact people that can justify that because it's somebody that they know, because it's somebody that they're close to and that they're friends with. And well, that makes it okay. But then nobody else should do it. But this one time, that's okay. And I think that's kind of an overarching narrative that you can apply to most things that I grew up Catholic, that a lot of Catholics did is we shouldn't be doing this one thing, but they're good people. I know them well, and we'll just let this one slide, and it's okay just this one time.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to see this sort of mental gymnastics and rationalization that people do to justify their bigotry or bad ideas. And that's actually my main area of study. So I try to look at why this occurs and how can we prevent this and correct it? Because I find it fascinating, but also depressing because, here's a real world example of some guy being presented with evidence, scientific evidence. There's a stack of articles I gave him. And he's just like, well, I saw this documentary, Fetuses Runaway, like just absurd things. And he's able to do the gymnastics in his head and keep going along.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I wanted to talk to you about, too, is because, like, the psychological aspects of religion and belief are pretty fascinating because they then inform the practices that people make in just regular life, whether it's politics or daily life, and that are affecting people as a whole. So, like, what keeps people going back to these just deeply held beliefs? And because, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going away either.
No. No, it's not. And there's a lot of things. So it's such a complicated issue. And I feel like if we just even just focus on religion, there are some very positive psychological benefits to being religious. It can help you reduce uncertainty and anxiety and create meaning. Whenever something bad happens, you can be like, well, God has a plan for me. And that's a really powerful feeling to have. So that alone is something that we need to consider whenever we're talking about religious people and why they believe. You're really trying to change their worldview and how they see, how they justify how and why events happen.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there's this whole community aspect too. So you have this powerful, positive belief, and then all of your friends believe the same thing, and they validate your beliefs. So you create this whole network of people that formulates your identity. And that's really the crux of, I think, why we see these beliefs perpetuate. A lot of it falls back to identity. And identities are just a way for us to navigate our environments and our social worlds. So it's really hard if you have this identity as a religious person or even as a conservative or a Democrat, and someone tells you, no, your entire worldview is wrong. That's a very threatening feeling, and we don't want to accept that. So we need to figure out ways to mitigate that defensive feeling that people have.
Right, because nobody wants to be kind of, with this community and then all of a sudden, like, out on their own little island by themselves, because that's scary and lonely, and then they lose that whole bit.
Yeah, and this in a very extreme example, when you look at Scientology and people who leave Scientology, like, they are literally shunned. Like, they don't exist anymore, and to a lot of people, I can understand how that is terrible. You have these people who you've grown to know and trust and love, and now all of a sudden you're completely on your own in your circle of friends, and how that goes.
And so I guess is there a way? I mean, obviously, like, we're not going to wake up tomorrow and everyone's going to be, it's going to be a secular nation and, like, reason prevails and all of that. But is there a way to show people that there is, like, hope and community and all these good things without, needing a supernatural belief?
I think so. There's lots of work within the secular movement of people trying to explain how we can have community and hope and meaning. A lot of the humanist circles really focus on this. So it's like, okay, we don't believe in God, now what? So I think that there is sort of a replacement there. And obviously there's atheists who have community and are happy. So it's possible, like we see this happening.
Yes.
But as far as getting people to transition, that's the real trick, is you're asking them to reject their entire worldview and beliefs that their friends and family really respect them for and validate them.
And I think people expect things like that to happen overnight or suddenly, or, you know, over the course of just a few days or a few conversations. And I think with any sort of change, that meaningful change that's going to be lasting, it's going to be gradual. It's going to be incremental. It's not going to be just more often than not, suddenly now somebody is out like that. And so I think it's important to still interact with people who, you know, if you're trying to work on them to get them to change that, to interact with them in a positive manner and you know, help them ease that transition into a more, I guess, secular worldview.
Yeah.
Secular, yeah, I think so.
Like rational, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily even have to be atheism. Like, I'm an atheist, but I don't think that everyone has to be an atheist to have a better world. I think that we can, if everyone was secular, we would have a much better world. Yeah. So if we could kind of remove the religion from politics, as we see with abortion, for example, like that stuff, like I think we'd all be a lot better off if we could find a way to separate the two.
Well, I think right now in our country, especially here, it's like, I think that's the first step. Like, can we have church and state just, you know, do their own things? Like, cause really, like I know that even in like the near future or a little bit distant future, people are not going to, like, belief is not going to be absent. Like, belief in supernatural beings is not going to disappear. But if that could, you know, stop, if we could kind of stop mixing up, you know, religion and government, that'd be cool. Like, if the kind of anti-science side of things could just calm down a little bit, that'd be awesome.
I agree.
That, and so it just seems like sometimes, like, I mean, there's so much evidence out there for even, like, something basic like evolution, but then religion gets in and still continues to muddy the waters of what people believe. Like, when people believe so strongly in religion and they reject science, like, is that, I mean, I imagine that probably frustrates you from the point of view of, like, a scientist.
It does. And again, it's frustrating, but I feel like for me, it helps to try to think sociologically and psychologically where they're coming from. And again, that they come from this, they use their identities to navigate the world. And so whenever you present a creationist with evidence for evolution, that threatens everything they know about the universe, or what they think they know about the universe. So it's very scary to them. So you have to do it in a way that's going to not completely destroy their worldview and still kind of have them in a way that they can absorb some of it. And there's been some, this is recent research, trying to look at different ways that we can have people more accepting of evidence that goes against their identity. Creationism's pretty tough because it's so strong, but other ones, more political beliefs that aren't so central to how people view the you know, reality. There's been some evidence that there are ways to fix it.
Yeah, because I guess that's one of the questions, right? Like, how do we have conversations with people who don't agree with us? Like, how do we have sort of a civil discourse? And maybe, hopefully, every once in a while, help somebody rethink their worldview.
Yeah, it's tricky. And this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, especially since the election.
Yeah.
And given my research areas too, I feel like it's necessary to have these conversations, especially if we look at the psychology, that basically the psychology in a nutshell is like people can't change their mind if they're feeling defensive. So as frustrating as it is to talk to someone that's spouting off some racist or sexist things, just calling them a racist, sexist and yelling at them is actually not going to change their mind. So it's frustrating because we're going to be very upset by the stuff that they're saying. But if the goal is to reduce bigotry and polarization, we need to try to have some mutual understanding and empathy and respect. So I think that's personally one of the ways forward. It's not the only way forward. Other people, by being very strong in the rhetoric and creating a lot of awareness can also be really beneficial, such as protesting or other different ways. But for me personally, something that I'm going to try to do is have more conversations with people that I disagree with and try to have some mutual understanding, respect, try to see where we're coming from, because that's when we're better able to absorb information that goes against their identity, because we don't feel as threatened and we're not as defensive. So I think if the goal is on a micro level to change someone's mind, we have to treat them with respect, with empathy, be direct in what we mean to say, and try to connect to them on a personal level on why this is important to us.
Yeah, because I mean, everybody, you know, holds strongly to what they believe and what makes their own identity. And I guess we have to, as much as we can, look at that person across from us, even though we have different beliefs, but like look at them as just another person, right? Who, you know, has a lot that they care about, but I don't know, sometimes it's hard, right?
Like, it is, for sure.
Especially like, I mean, the climate in the past, what, like, how long has it been? A month and a bit since the big day, since it all.
We've made it like a half hour on the record without saying his name. Let's not.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting time in that these questions have really started coming up even more. Is just how do we communicate? And also, like, do we always have to engage with people who don't agree with us? Can we, I don't know. Because I know, I guess I'm kind of guilty of it sometimes where, like, if I look at my Facebook, like, friends and stuff, it's kind of an echo chamber that I have on my, like, you know, personal page.
That's at the same time, you need a space like that. You need a place where you feel comfortable around other people, or else bad things are going to happen. But you have to be aware that that's the situation that you're in. I'm aware that my news feed is predominantly memes and things like that. Like, and obviously a lot of what people would consider to be left-leaning thoughts and posts. But I'm aware that Facebook and whatever media you're using is showing you what you want to see so that you keep using their product. So that's the danger, is those people who don't think in those terms or aren't concerned on that level. Yeah.
So I guess just like being aware of your own echo chamber is good. And then to try to educate yourself outside of that too, of what the other side of the world sees.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I think it's really important to have a space for yourself. Like Dan said, I think it's totally fine to admit that we need self-care sometimes. Like, that's a good thing. That's all really great things. And I'm never going to disparage someone if they just want to have an echo chamber. I think it's just whenever we think about changing other people's minds, then we have to engage with people we might not have in our Facebook friend feed, for example, and that's totally okay. So, yeah.
I feel like I have the Science Moms documentary page for engaging with all different sorts of people outside of my echo chamber. So, we all have our spaces for both, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess I'm curious at this point, like, what are some of your, like, future, like, if you had some, like, dream topics to research and study, like, what are you interested in moving forward?
Gosh, there's so many. I think right now it is kind of along a lot of these same lines, really parsing out the mechanism of how we can get people to accept identity-threatening information. That's really the crux of what I'm studying right now for my PhD. So I'm lucky that I'm kind of studying the exact thing that I would choose if I had an opportunity to choose pretty much anything. And that's what I'm working on. I just collected some data for my master's thesis. Results didn't exactly come back the way I wanted to, but I guess I won't talk about that too much right now since it's not.
But that means no. All that means is you change the results to be what you want.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
That's how it works.
Gosh. No. It's still cool. It was still great to do science and get a result. Like, null results are still results, and they're still cool.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing science, so that's cool, right? Like, that's, if you're a scientist, that's the dream, right? To do science and then to talk about it. And actually, there's some rumblings that you might be having a podcast of your own. Is that true?
Those rumblings are true. So I hope to do have a podcast of my own. Also, it's going to be called According to Matthew, like my blog, because I couldn't think of anything more creative, to be honest.
I like that.
I think you need to somehow involve your last name, because you could have a lot of fun with that, or at least fun with people trying to pronounce it.
Oh, gosh. I just expect it. Like, it's totally fine. But yeah, I'm looking forward to starting this pod. It seems overwhelming, like, just the technical part and just taking time to do it. But I think it will be fun.
Honestly, if we could do it, if the two of us are able to do a podcast, you could definitely do a podcast. We are.
I spent maybe an entire week trying to figure out how to get it hosted, like, on my own website. And then, because I was like, damn it, I'm already paying for a website, I can do this. And then it got to a point where I was just like, I cannot do this. So that's when we jumped on the Libsyn train. That's what I mean, comparatively, Libsyn is incredibly easy to get things set up and going, and they are not paying, they need to be paying me to say, mention their name.
Yeah, I've heard other people like it, so I might actually try that one too.
Yeah, I've heard only good things. No, it's like, it's fun and it's cool, and, like, honestly, it'll just give you another excuse to talk to, like, your friends and interesting people. And yeah, because I really think that the more of these conversations that get put out into the world, like, you never know who's going to come across them. Mm-hmm. Like, you never know if somebody, like, say, who's living in the South and feels alone is going to listen to this, to you talking about living in South Carolina, and feel like, oh, I am not the only person in this situation. Let me go, you know, find some like-minded people. Like, you just never know when something like this or a conversation you have will connect with somebody. So
yeah. I think one of the first podcasts I was ever on, I was actually talking about some of my gender equality activism, and I got an email a couple days after it was online from this guy. I forget what state it was from, maybe Nebraska, saying that he was raising four daughters and he really appreciated some of what I was talking about, gender equality, because he was never really exposed to feminism too much. And now he's going to take some of my ideas and use it in how he raises his children to be more egalitarian. And that was just, like, overwhelming to hear that just some things that I was talking about on this podcast could have such an impact on this guy listening. So after that, I've been just in awe of the change that people can have from having dialogue and talking about ideas. And yet, you're right, you'll never know who's listening. And if you can have a positive impact on one person, it's worth all the time and energy.
Totally. So if people, after they've listened to this, like, want to, like, hear more from you on the internet, where can they find you?
So I have my blog, According to Matthew, on Pathios. I try to write there pretty regularly, where I cover topics of religion, politics, science, social justice. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter. My last name is Fossiani, so I guess just try to see the text and copy and paste it in the Google if you're listening to this. And
we'll have links to everything okay. in the notes.
Okay, absolutely. Cool. So yeah, all the links, you can find me all the places. I'm always talking about these types of things. And, you know, I'm interested in talking to people from diverse backgrounds to try to have mutual understanding. And, you know, you can follow my research that I'm doing. I try to post updates about that too. Also on my Facebook. So I'm all over the internet and I try to take what I learn and share it with as many people as I can.
Well, thank you for sharing all of this with us tonight, and we hope to have you back again sometime. And yeah, thank you. And good luck with your own podcast. We'll be listening.
Great. So, thank you so much. Yeah, it was a lot of fun talking to you guys. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
This week, the reason we love the internet is a statement that probably wouldn't make much sense like 10 years ago because of a hashtag and Twitter and, I mean, I don't like either, but this one is actually good. So like, you know.
So, yeah.
Whatever.
It's good.
It's the hashtag, it's good. It's hashtag actual living scientist.
Yeah, so I noticed this popping up. Was it yesterday or the day before or something? But it's all different. If you click on the hashtag, it's a fuck ton of scientists just tweeting what they do, like a picture of themselves. Like, the first one that came up when I just clicked on the link or the hashtag here is some guy named Lewis Bartlett. I'm an actual living scientist researching honeybees and disease evolution. And then he also has sometimes dress like a woman, that hashtag, but not sure that's what Trump meant. So he makes a beautiful woman, next to his honey.
I did not catch the whatever the dress like a woman, like what's that about?
Yeah. So see, I'm trying to figure, Donald Trump in some context, right? Did he say something about dressing like a woman, and then everybody started being like pretty much saying, well, I guess it's, you know, just a classic like fuck you Donald Trump, right? Because we need to say that in some way or another.
There's so much to keep up with.
I saw the hashtag pop up and then just, you know, made some assumptions as to what that was about. But yeah, it is very difficult to keep up with what it is, but
I'm just going through and just retweeting all of these because
it's just cool. Yeah, seriously, I've been kind of retweeting them as I've seen them from friends and stuff over the past few days, like Trevor Valley, one of our friends of the show,
friend of the show,
like, you know, he's a paleontologist. Another friend of the show, Michael, is a scientist who actually I'm friends with in real life too, and I have retweeted his, you know, actual living scientist. And I don't know, this is just a cool, like, scroll through the hashtag for people because it just shows all the diverse fields. And actually I am noticing a lot of dress like a woman crossover in this too, which I'm digging also. So that's cool.
Yeah. And of course we'll have a link like to the actual statement that would not make sense like 10, 15 years ago. I will have a link to the Twitter hashtag search. So I don't know. I don't know what any of this is.
You're like, I'll just have a link to the Twitter. I'll have a link to the Twitter for the kids.
Somewhere. I'm supposed to say follow me on Twitter and Instagram.
Follow me everywhere on the internet. Yeah. But yes, everybody take a look through actual living scientist or hashtag actual living scientist and, you know, retweet it, like them, share them, whatever people are doing. And I think just any cool ways to sort of celebrate science right now, right? That's rad. And give credit to the people who are doing awesome things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So if you made it this far, thank you for listening to this week's episode. If like you have it inside you, like deep down, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Stitcher or something really cool I don't even know about. You can reach out to us at podcast@ascienceenthusiast.com. Check out our full archive at scienceenthusiastpodcast.com. You can also check out our Patreon, I guess, at patreon.com/TSE podcast or A Science Enthusiast to get access to premium content, extended interviews. We're doing a live video of this record right now, so you get to see all the shit that like I cut out because I don't know how to talk like a normal human being. And, you know, and you could also see like the cool shirt that I'm wearing, and you would see like my new haircut, which like
it looks good.
It looks good. I feel good. A little Richard Spencer-ish. And I didn't realize that until like I got done. Well, actually, no, I realized it when she got done because she like cut up a little too high and she goes, well, how does it look? And I'm like, look like a Nazi. Like
gave me the Richard Spencer. Thank you.
Right. Like that's not the look that I wanted to go with, but I mean,
No. You don't look full Nazi.
I don't look full Nazi.
You don't look full Nazi.
But of course, because I say we shouldn't punch Nazis.
Then you just are. You are. It's not even a look thing. It's like your hair could look totally different and they'd say the same thing.
Yeah, it means I'm a Nazi. Yeah. But, you know, if you want to support, like, I guess Nazi supporters?
Oh, God.
Are we going to call ourselves that now?
No.
Is this my life?
This is our life, and it's really strange that we've gotten to this point.
I mean,
this is where we are.
You could, that would make you as cool as Sarah, James, Chris, Amanda, Bruce, Felix, Michael, Alice, and friend of the show, Trevor Valley. We would be incredibly grateful.
Yeah.
Fancy a quote? I can't say that. I have to say hit us with a quote, don't I?
Hit us
with a quote. I try to be different.
I'll hit you with a quote. We are our own dragons as well as our own heroes, and we have to rescue ourselves from ourselves. And that is one of my favorite authors, Tom Robbins. Again, I've used him before. Not a science guy, not a atheist guy.
It doesn't have to be science or atheist.
Because
you know why?
Why?
Because it's our fucking show, goddammit.
That's true. But actually, I think
we have show autonomy.
We do. We do, and we can do whatever the fuck we want. And I think, though, that quote is pretty appropriate in this time. So yeah, you're right. We can do what we want to do. Yes.
I'm a strong, independent show.
We are a strong, independent show, and we'll be back next week with another show. And actually, I think next week it's the one you did an interview without me. And
oh, I did.
You did. You did an interview focusing on... Yeah.
Like the coolest name person that I think I've ever talked to, Shaughnessy Naughton. She is the founder of the PAC 314 Action, which is an organization that is focusing on advocating for science.
Don't silence the science, ooh. Dan. Don't silence the science.
Right. But also, helping scientists transition into being politicians. So we're going to talk about that, and that will be great, or was great. I mean, it already happened, I guess, since Natalie, again, like, ruined the mystique of the show. And so we are going to close out this episode with a promo of one of our favorite podcasts, Scathing Atheist. They had me and Natalie and I, goddamn, like, this is why we edit. We did the intro to the show because I always do a Farnsworth quote about evolution. So we did that. So we will close out what we did for them. So thank you for listening. See you guys next week.
This is Natalie and Dan of the Science Enthusiast Podcast.
Despite what you may have heard, we don't really think there was much intelligence put into our design as humans.
I mean, if we were intelligently designed, then why is it necessary to cut the end of babies' dicks off?
And then proceed to have a rabbi perform oral sex on the child? I mean, what is this, a Catholic church or something?
Which is why we assure you that we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
This podcast contains language that is not appropriate for children, including fucktropolis, cum glove. Oh, I can't even talk. I can't even say cum guzzler. Why can't I say that word?
What kind All of? Right. What kind of? Like podcaster are you?
I know.
We do this just to be edgy, so that we can get the explicit tag, so like the kids will think we're cool.
We're cool. I know the kids. It's all about the kids. Okay, so this podcast contains language that is not appropriate for children, including fucktropolis.
You want to try that again?
I do. One more time. I want to try it as many times as possible. And yeah.
The music you heard tonight was written and performed by Adam Johnson and was used with his permission. You can contact Adam at adamjohnsondc@gmail.com. This podcast is property of Not Narrow or Straight, LLC, all rights reserved.